So you, I'm Brian and I'm alcoholic. My home group is Brisbane Traditions Group, meets Tuesday night Morningside Church in Brisbane, Australia. My sobriety date is the 20th of the 6th, 1977. And if you had told me that when I went to that first meeting that I wouldn't have a drink from that day to this, I'd have had a heart attack. Because I was the type of person that needed to drink. I had a job that I loved. I was a leading hand in a brewery, which enabled me to steal what I needed and take the rest home. But people made some decisions about my life. The lady I was married to, they made decisions about where I slept. My boss was getting a little bit sick of me. The only reason I kept the job, I was a union delegate. And a few other things. But the guy picked me up and took me to this meeting, and it was a steps meeting, it was on step two, and it was the second steps group in, or meeting in Australia. And they only met, only did the step once a month, and they'd only just started it. And they had a meeting, I found this out years after, that they had a meeting because there was a newcomer coming, whether they would tell him about the steps or they would go back to ID and identify, and a man who's later to become my sponsor said, well, he's got to find out how to get well sometime, it may as well be tonight. And I've always been grateful for that. I went into that meeting and I sat in the back row and as far back as I could get because I didn't really want to be there, and I made a decision. I looked at all those steps on the banners and the wall and I made one firm decision that I wasn't going to do any of that. But after about 4 months of going to meetings on a nightly basis, I reached a point that they talk about in the big book, The Face of Four Hideous Horsemen, and I wanted to commit suicide sober. And I rang this guy who was my sponsor, and he didn't live far away, and it was about 3 a.m. in Canberra and it's cold, and I went around to his place and he sat me down and made a cup of coffee and pulled out the big book and took me back and showed me where step one was. I didn't have too much problem with the powerless part. I could see that easy enough because I just had to look at decisions I'd made and a couple of jail sentences and that were back then. But the unmanageability of my life was a totally different thing. I liked control. And when he got to that part, I said, oh, no, I don't know, Paul, about that. He said, well, I said, my life's not unmanageable. He said, Brian, 20 minutes ago you were talking about killing yourself. How much more manageable do you want to be, you know? So I had to surrender to that, and it was on from then. But I ended up working, leaving the job that I had after about 2 years of sobriety and started to go back into do things. I would do a lot of meetings. And in 1987, a guy came over to speak at our national convention, a guy that changed my thinking on a lot of things. A guy come from Pompano Beach in Florida. His name was Wesley Parrish. And my sponsor was organising this guy to talk, and I was sitting in the down in the back row and was a bit, how could you say it, closed-minded. I didn't want to hear some yank talk for 45 minutes, you know. And because I was brought up on three things, and I'll explain them to you. One was during the Second World War, the Americans come to Australia and they played around with all the Australian women. That was one. The second one is that they killed Farlap. The third one is that they killed Les Darcy. And I told my sponsor I didn't want to go to this meeting for those three reasons. And he asked me when I was born. I said, 1949. He said, the war finished in 44. What did that, the sexual behaviour have to do with you? I said, nothing, but really, you know. And then he said, what about Farlap? And for those of you who don't know, Farlap was a racehorse who died in 1934, which had nothing to do with me at all. And then he said, and there's Darcy, who was he? And I couldn't tell him. But he was a boxer that died in 1915. You see, I had a lot of conditioning from my family and things about these, and I had a closed mind. And this guy, Wesley Parrish, started to talk. And he started to talk about alcoholism. And he started to talk about it from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'd been introduced to it, and I'd read a little bit of it, and I'd put it in the bar next to me bottle of Johnny Walker so I'd see it there, and all that sort of stuff. And it enabled me to open my mind and say, well, maybe there's something in this. I better go and have a look. So the first time I come to the States was 1979. I come over and I went to a couple of regional conventions and went home and thought, well, that's enough of, you know, I found out what I needed to find out, and my sponsor took me through the things that I needed to do. But my life started to change in Canberra. A couple of people from the General Service Board come down and they were talking about what a general service structure is. In Australia, they were just setting it up. And I said to Paul, what's this about? And he said, I don't know, but go along and find out and come back and tell us. So I went and I found out, and I ended up being a district committee member and about 3 weeks later. And from then it was on, and, you know, I found out that it was when they talked about three legacies of Alcoholics Anonymous, the recovery through our 12 steps, our unity of purpose through our 12 traditions, and our service through the third legacy, that they were the things that I needed to know. They were the things that I needed to participate in, or I could go back to what they told me after that first meeting. If I didn't like what I got, I could have all my misery back free of charge. And so I started to read, and I started to participate, and I started to do things in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went to big book studies, and I went to, you know, tradition workshops, and I went to a lot of things. And I enjoy the fellowship of learning in Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happened was I got in about 1991 or something. I was sitting in an office, and I'd long left the brewery, and I was doing some stuff, and a guy rang me and said, I have a job that we would like you to do, and it's nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, I would like you to go up to the Bendigo prison and run a workshop. And I said, they won't let people like me in there. And I went up and I spoke to the governor, and or the warden, as you call him, and he looked at my past and everything else, and he said, well, I think you're just the man we need to run this workshop. Takes one to catch one. And so that's what I did. And after that, I was moved to New South Wales to work in the correctional centre there, and it was then that I was asked to stand as a delegate for Area D, Eastern Region. And I thought, when that was elected to that, I thought that was the greatest privilege that Alcoholics Anonymous could ever give me. I was just dumbfounded that they would ask me. Because, see, I left school at 14 with three cuts on each hand, and he told me not to come back. You know? I wasn't what you'd call a top student. I've got a son who's a school teacher now, and he often says to me, what did you used to do at school? And I told him I was good in two subjects. One was sport and the other one was truancy. And he doesn't seem to think that that's much good for his students. I don't know why. But anyway, I got into, you know, I became the delegate and was able to get around Area D, and it's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun. And I was asked just in a luncheon a while ago, and the lady asked me what was the greatest thing that I remember about it. And one of it was we produced a commemorative big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, a big red one, that for 50 years of AA in Australia. And it's a fantastic book, you know. A bit of controversy about whether we should have done it or shouldn't have done it, but what the heck, we did it, you know. And so that was that. And then I rotated off out of that and I got transferred up to Queensland where I live today. And when I was a delegate, I got a report of the jail, one of the jails up there that was having a lot of trouble, and the AA people had moved the volunteers from one jail to another because they weren't treated the right way. And I got asked to go to the jail where they weren't treated the right way. So I took that report and I walked into the GM, the governor, and I said, "See this?" He said, "Oh, that doesn't sound too good." I said, "No, that went to every state in Australia and New Zealand too, just to let you know how good your jail's going." And he said, "Well, you better fix it." So he gave me a free rein to do what was needed. But that was my professional life. My life as a delegate went on, and I'd rotated off, and I was happy. And one day, some people come to see me, and they said, "Brian, we'd like to put you forward for the Northeastern Regional Trustee." And I said, "Who else is standing?" And they told me. I said, "Well, he'll do a better job than me. Get him to do it." And I went and asked a previous trustee about it, whether I should. And he told me something that I've never forgotten. He said, "Brian, your decision's not whether you serve this fellowship. Your decision is not whether you're the best trust person for the job. Your decision is only whether you will serve the fellowship or not." He said, "Whether you get the job is a fellowship's responsibility. It's not yours. You've just got to say, yes, I'll do it, or no, I won't." And so I ended up as a trustee for 4 years. And it was an interesting time. We did a lot of things, you know. The board was moving, and we had, you know, good chairman, and we had good conferences, and, you know, a lot of good things happened. But like all things, it comes a time when you rotate off, and I was glad to do that. But at the end of it, I was feeling, just where do I go? What do I do, you know? Because one day you had all this information and all this activity that you had to do, and 2 weeks later I had nothing to do, you know? And so I joined a group that just treated me. This lady said, "Why don't you come out to our group, Brian? Settle down, just relax." And I went out to the Brisbane Traditions Group, and I've been a member of it ever since, and I love it, you know? Because you know why? They treated me not as a past trustee or past anything. They just treated me as one alcoholic talking to another. And, you know, Bill said that, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous will change, but for God's sake, never take the kitchen table out of it, of one alcoholic talking to another. So that was it, and I was happy and joyous and, you know, getting on with my life, and made $1 million and lost $1 million, and, you know, was able to weather that quite well without getting drunk. And then I was asked if I'd be interested in standing as a position that you have here, but we do it a little bit different. As we have national coordinators for treatment, for corrections, public information. You have them in GSO, but we just have them as volunteers around the thing. We're not quite as big as you are yet. And so I said yes. I ended up the national coordinator for corrections in Australia. And because I'd retired from jails, I, you know, got out and, as I said, made $1 million, lost $1 million, and done the things that I had to do. And I took that job on, and it was, you know, you get a lot of phone calls and problems, and you get people ringing you up and saying, "My clearances won't go through," and well, so, you know. And you say, "Well, why don't you take it to the area assembly?" He said, "Oh, I don't want to be involved in that." So I said, "Well, you caused the problem, you fix it, see you later." But I got an email, and it's probably the highlight of the years of service, was I got an email from the General Service Board saying about the Solomon Islands, that the jail up there, they were having some little problems, and with some things, because in 2010 we'd brought a Solomon Islands guy over and showed him around and sent him back, and he started to, you know, do a few things and started to sell Alcoholics Anonymous to the jail, and he was doing quite well too till he started to go in at 9 o'clock in the morning and come out at 9:30 and send a bill in for the whole day. Jails don't like that. They seem to want to know where people are. So I, you know, went up there and sorted that little problem out. And I did something that when I was asked to go, I wasn't quite sure how to handle it. So I said, there's, in my home group, there's a lady, Philomena, who's Solomon Islands born and raised. And I thought, well, I'll ask her about cultural differences and things like that. And so I said to her, and she started to tell me and explain it to me. And it was just mind-boggling for me, you know. I thought, God, I'll never work all this out, you know, because I only had about 7 days before I left. So I contacted the board and said, how about I take her with me? It's easier that way. And they said, yes, that's a good idea. And so we did. So we went up and we did the thing in the jail. We took a suitcase full of literature and had a talked on the radio around all the islands. We, you know, spoke to the press, spoke to a couple of bishops and all the rest of that sort of stuff, and got the jail was sorted out. And come back, and the Church of Melanesia has a fairly big influence in that area, and they asked us, would we come back in April and talk to all the, from, they have a big conference of all the church leaders, and they asked us, would we come back and talk to them? So we said yes, and went back to the board, and they said yes, and we come up, and we thought, well, we can go and talk to all these people, but if, you know, if nothing changes, nothing changes. So we looked at it and we thought, well, we'll do a public awareness meeting, an open public awareness meeting. We'll get a little place at the back of the motel, hotel we were staying at, and we'll have a, we'll start a group there. And we did. We did that, had the public meeting. A lot of people come along. Then we had the meeting and we rented a room for them, and a guy called Clay and a lady called Mary come in, and they're still sober today, those two people. And the first Solomon Islands group actually starts from that day. And there's a big palm tree at the back of where they meet, and that palm tree, they all call it Brian, or Spakamasta. Don't ask me what it means, I don't know. But I come back and I've seen that that was my role done. And that group, you know, emails and talking to them. And then we handed it over to the World Service delegates, and they've gone ahead and they've gone up there and continued to nurture that group and keep it growing. And from those two people 2.5 years ago, there's now about 20 Solomon Islands people who are sober and growing and carrying the message, you know, and doing all that. That's one of the highlights of my life. And when the World Service delegates and that went up there, and Clay and Mary and them knew they were coming, and they welcomed it at the airport, and they give them lays and they drove them down to the thing, and everybody's seeing who are these people, and they're waving and they're telling me about it when they come home. And my partner likes to go on cruises, and these cruises have started to go to Honiara. I said, oh, we could go there and I could, you know, catch up with people in the group. And she said, you only want to go and get one of those lays and things like that, you know. So it doesn't look like I'm going to get to go there by boat, but hopefully I'll be there in September this year. And, you know, that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. It's about carrying the message any way we can. It's willingness to take that extra mile. But my old sponsor used to tell me, and he died a few years ago, he says, you know, Brian, willingness without action is just Disneyland. It's fantasy, unless you're prepared to, you know. And I was one of those people that put my bum on the barroom seat on a regular basis, and I've got to do the same in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've got to suit up front and do what it asked me to do, you know. And what it asked my job today in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I've rotated off the prison thing, I've got a job in my home group, which is Reader of AA Around Australia. It's our little national magazine that we have, comes around, and I have to get it and read it and take it to the group conscience and say, well, this is what's going on in AA in Australia. And next month they'll take that off me. They'll probably give me a job of washing dishes or something, you know. But that's what it is, you know, and I love it. You know, I love the fact that I've been able to go from one side of things to the other, you know. And I'll just close on this, but my parents come from a small country town in the Riverina part of New South Wales, a place called Deniliquin. You can look it up, it's on the internet. They have a big ute muster there. And where they have that ute muster is a place I used to visit as a teenager for cultural education. And if you know what that means. Anyway, at my parents' 25th wedding anniversary, I wasn't invited, and I'm the second eldest. Because I'd been there a few years previously and caused a big heap of trouble in a small country town where, you know, my family helped start that town. So it went on, and then after I got sober, my sister got married and I was about 2.5, 3 years sober, and I didn't get an invite, but they talked about inviting me. You know, they discussed it. Then my younger brother got married, and they actually put it off to a weekend that I could get down there and be there, because I'd been reunited with my family. And that's what the big book promises me. It promises I'll be reunited with my family, not the wife that left and all the rest of that sort of stuff. You know, my daughter, who was there when John came to see me, who sat on the lounge when he was talking to me, she threw little eggs with numbers at him and hit him in the eye. And he picked it up and gave it back to her and said, here you are, love. She turns 40 today, you know. And that was the reason I went to the meeting. Because he could do something I couldn't do. I'd have given her a smack on the backside, you know. He picked it up and gave it back to her. So I owe that man a great deal. But, you know, to go through all those things. And when I leave here on Monday and go home, I've got to go and Dad's long gone and Mum's, you know, in a nursing home, and I ring her up most days and she says, when are you coming home? You know, when are you coming down to see us? You know? And one of the things is she's got a unit, and the cleaners were in and they were cleaning the unit one day, and the two of them were talking, you know, about a friend of mine, and Mum was sitting in the chair, and one of the ladies says, oh yes, he's an alcoholic, it's terrible. And Mum said, yes, my son Brian's one of them too. And the lady turned around and said, oh, Nance, isn't it terrible what they do? And she says, oh, no, he's one of the good ones. I'll get him to go and see Bones when he comes home. So, you know, and Bones and I drank a lot together, you know. So that's my story in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. I can't tell you any more than that. I'm grateful to be here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brian. Our next speaker is Dina from South Africa.
Good afternoon, friends. My name is Dina. I'm a recovering alcoholic. It's by the grace of God, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the 36 spiritual principles that I'm reasonably sane, but definitely sober. That's a thing beyond my wildest dreams. My group is the Bull's Room Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's in Durban, South Africa. My sobriety date is the 17th of February, 1986. It's not the only date I have. That address, 31 Baisley Avenue in Durban, South Africa, is quite a famous address. My late dad and mom, my late dad was an Alcoholics Anonymous in the 70s, and there was a big flurry of activity in that Sydenham area, and we were told that somebody from Alcoholics Anonymous is coming to the town. It was a lady. And I only discovered later that it was Louis B., Bill's wife, that visited this address, 31 Baisley Avenue, where I attended my AA meetings later. So it was a hole-in-the-wall group which carried anonymity to another level, because smoking was allowed, and very often the room was poorly ventilated. You had to take 2 steps down from the road to get to the group, otherwise you'll bump your head if you didn't bend. First act of humility. And very often when everybody lit up, you couldn't see the speaker, so we carried anonymity to another level. As I stand here this afternoon, the words of a famous song come to mind. I wish I could sing it for you. To dream the impossible dream, and to reach the unreachable star. From where I come, this is indeed the unreachable star for me. I want to thank the committee for allowing me this privilege of sharing with you. I want to wish my American friends a truly great Thanksgiving, Independence Day. You can see how mixed up I am. I'm not one of those that looked out of the window on a Sunday morning and said, today is a fine day to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I came here beaten, broken, helpless, hopeless, godless, faithless, unwanted and unloved. And I sat at the meeting and the chairman said, things beyond your wildest dreams will come true. Because there are ladies in the room, I will not like tell you what I was thinking then. But the most precious commodity I found in Alcoholics Anonymous was hope. As I sat there hopeless, as I sat there after a failed suicide, broken, because the opening lines of the 5th chapter said, rarely have we seen a person fail who has suddenly fallen apart. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to the simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. As long as the liar inside of me was well and alive, I had no chance of recovery. I said the 17th of February 1986 was my date of sobriety. I want to say that my entry to Alcoholics Anonymous as a young man at the age of 22, I entered Alcoholics Anonymous on the 30th of May 1977. I stayed sober for 6 years. You know what I say? I often say this, my education began in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think one of our members of Alcoholics Anonymous, I think he's from San Francisco, I think his name is Austin Ripley, he says, Alcoholics Anonymous is the greatest university on earth where priests can learn from Pama. And I believe that. One of the famous American novels said, Mark Twain, who said, don't let your formal schooling interfere with your education. Education of value is what I've received in these rooms. I had a lot of formal schooling. I have pieces of paper on my study that says I have this qualification and that qualification and the other qualification. That was formal schooling, but education of value is what I received from you. I've received from some of my teachers. I was a teacher by profession. But when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I choose to be a pupil. For as long as I remain a pupil, you will teach me. I came here, and after 6 years, I graduated out of Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought I was too young. I looked around and I saw people who were 45 and 50, and I said, I got another 20 years before I could come here. I didn't listen to Tradition 3, which said, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking, full stop. But I was unteachable. When I speak of education, education begins with ABC. Today the ABC for me is A, that I'm alcoholic and could not manage my own life. B, that probably no human power could leave my alcoholism. C, that God could and would if he were sought. That's ABC for me. I had to learn it. I can't capture the essence of my drinking story in such a short while. One of our most famous South Africans wrote a book. It is entitled Long Walk to Freedom. You all know him, our Nelson Mandela, our beloved Nelson Mandela. That describes our lives, our collective lives in Alcoholics Anonymous, and our individual sharing from here, the long walk to freedom. The famous French philosopher Jean-Jacques Rousseau said, man is born free, but everywhere in chains. I was in chains, and I didn't know it. I knew my late dad, whatever he is, I want to pay tribute to him for his love and service in Alcoholics Anonymous. He was 30 years sober when he passed on 15 years ago. He made me a full beneficiary of this program. The 36 principles, the 12 principles of recovery, the 12 principles of unity, and the 12 principles of service, 12 concepts of service. So I'm a full beneficiary of this. I stopped coming to meetings after 6 years, and I had 2 years of hell. And I reached that point on the 16th of February 1986, the T-junction of my life, where the book tells us there are only three consequences of an alcoholic of my type: death, insanity, or recovery. Well, if you go to the guys in the pub and tell them, I learned in AA to drink is to die, they'll say, if you don't drink, you'll still die. So why will you have a drink? But Alcoholics Anonymous is talking about the death that we alcoholics die day by day as we stripped of our dignity, as we stripped of our self-respect. In the end, I was stripped of my humanity, my birthright. I became a thing. Nobody was saying, there's Dina coming. They said, there's that thing coming again. There it comes. My wife was saying to a brother, a medical doctor, on a Sunday morning, I think there's generally the conversation is about the alcoholic. And she was saying to him, don't worry, Suren. If it continues, it will soon kill itself. And I didn't know she was talking about me. That is where I come from. I come from a point where my mother said, Dina, just go somewhere and die. I hated this woman for that. But I realized, only when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, that even when an animal is in pain, the veterinary surgeon will put the animal down. Not because he hates the animal. He puts the animal down because he loves the animal. That's the death my mother wanted for me. She wanted to take her only son out of the pain. I believe that that suicide on the 16th of February 1986 was successful, because it was on that night that old Dina died. And I had a spiritual rebirth on the 17th of February 1986 as I walked into these rooms. If you ever know somebody who had a relapse, don't scold him. Don't tell him you know about this program. Just tell him that you love him. Just tell her that you love her. And that's all I needed. I needed you to tell me that you love me. And you know, I remember that group, my friend Pravesh there will remember it in the North Coast, the Tong Art group when I went there. And look, if ever the thing to convince you about service, this is a story that will convince you. My late dad had a passion to serve. We lived in Durban. He traveled 43 kilometers away from home to set up a little group in the north coast of Natal. And do you know, after my failed suicide, it was into that group that I crawled. That group was open for me. It endorses the adage that it's only in giving that we truly receive. My father didn't think, oh, my son, my only son, is going to walk into that group. Therefore, let me go and set that group up. He did what alcoholics do, to stay sober and carry this message to the still suffering alcoholic. It never gets bigger than that. Whether it's a group meeting, whether it's a one-on-one, whether it's a 12-step, whether it's an international convention, it is still one alcoholic carry the message to another. So this journey for me has been a wonderful journey. The long walk to freedom had begun. I found a sponsor, and I began to relearn. Alcoholics Anonymous does not give you an extension of your old life. It gives you a brand new life. And day one of my life started on the 17th of February, 1986. And I was a willing pupil. You know, they say, I think there is a saying, I remember this, when we are particularly noisy class in primary school, and the teacher wrote on the board, where the pupil is ready, the teacher will appear. And when the pupil was ready, the teachers appeared. All you wonderful people taught me lovingly. And then I became a full beneficiary. I think my friend Pravesh was sharing the other day, and he told me, you know, he collapsed those 36 principles. The 12 principles of recovery will stop me from killing myself. The 12 principles of unity will stop us from killing each other. And the 12 principles of service will help us to help somebody and take our mind off our own problems. So this has been a wonderful journey. I just want to share one great benefit of this fellowship. I have a daughter. In fact, I have four daughters. The one in particular was attached to a drunken father. She wanted to accompany me everywhere. And you know the unconditional love of a child for the father. And one day I took her to the pub at 6 o'clock in the evening. And you know what happens? Intention was to just have one drink. And after I had the first drink, Alcoholics Anonymous is correct. It seemed like somebody nailed me to that stool. And I got off with this pub closed. And when I went off at 11 o'clock, 5 hours later, she was sitting in the car. And the first thing this child tells me, "Dad, are you all right?" The love of a child for a father. But she suffered through her schoolwork. I was very, very arrogant as a teacher myself. I would take a report and I would say to her, "What are these rings here? You know, you have failed this, you failed that, you failed that. You certainly get this from your mother's side of the family." And we'll soon forget about the child and we'll start arguing with each other. And because of that, the child suffered to school. She used to come out last in class. I want to just share with you the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous. I started coming to meetings. I still didn't attend to her From 35 in class, she came to 30th, to 30th, to 25th, to 20th. And when she finished the grade 12 exam, she finished in the top 10 in the country. And today, she's a medical doctor. Now, these are the benefits. And how do I say thank you to the fellowship? I've got to translate this gratitude to action. I've got to become a full beneficiary of this program. And what I do is to do what you gave me. Out of the mess of my life comes the message. You know, in South Africa, the very first person to get the message of Alcoholics Anonymous was an African gentleman called Solomon. Look at his name, Solomon. He was a court, he was an official in a court. And he was drunk in the streets of Johannesburg. He hadn't gone to work. And he rummages in the bin. And in the bin, he finds a Reader's Digest article about Alcoholics Anonymous. He writes to the address, Box 459, New York. And they send him some literature. And Solomon stays sober. Out of the bin, out of my own rubbish, is what I take and make useful. Out of the mess of my life comes a message which I help to carry to the still suffering alcoholic. Then many of my countrymen who have not found this God-given gift of Alcoholics Anonymous, weave through the translations of the big book into Xhosa and to isiZulu, we are able to make this message more accessible to many, many of my countrymen. You know, the African language, there is a word that describes Alcoholics Anonymous. It's called Ubuntu. Ubuntu is, I am because you are. Muntu na mutu na bantu. A man is a man because of other men. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous is. I can never do it. I did this. If I tell you about my life, it's a broken vows, broken oaths, broken resolutions, broken promises. But when I made a decision, my life changed. And you played such a big part of my life. Such a big part of my life. Therefore, somebody asked me, how can you people travel 30 hours from South Africa to come to this meeting? When I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous, they told me, you are part of a family. I didn't know how big my family was until I saw them in the stadium last night. I have a big family. It's not all gloom and doom. Now, I'm going to share a little story with you. Something that you're all looking very serious. A man in a Superman outfit arrived at JF Kennedy Airport. He staggered into JF Kennedy Airport and he said, can I have a ticket to L.A.? And the lady at the desk told him, look here, sir, in that condition, you cannot fly. He said, yeah, that's why I'm buying a ticket. I want to thank you. I want to thank Alcoholics Anonymous for trusting me even before I could begin to trust myself. I want to thank Alcoholics Anonymous for believing me even before I could begin to believe in myself. I want to thank Alcoholics Anonymous for understanding me even before I could begin to understand myself. And most importantly, I want to thank Alcoholics Anonymous for loving me even before I could love myself. Thank you and God bless you all.
Thank you very much, Dina. My next speaker, I had the great fortune of attending the 40th anniversary of Alcoholics Anonymous in Japan. So, Kuniko, are you going to go here? Okay. Kuniko is going to share with us, and this is Doug G. He's going to help translate.
My name is Kuniko, alcoholic from Japan.
Yeah.
急に言われてちょっと動揺していますけれども、まずアメリカの80周年おめでとうございます。
I was just told right before coming up on the podium, ちょっと横通して、okay. I was told just before I walked in the room that I'd be speaking today, and so I'm a little bit nervous, so let me just get this out of the way. Congratulations on your Independence Day here in America.
それからこういう話をする機会を与えてくださった神に感謝します。
And I'm also very grateful to my higher power for allowing me the opportunity to be able to speak with you all today.
私は前の二人と違う経験を持ってます。
You know, I have a bit of a different experience than the previous two speakers with us.
まず AA、日本では、まず私が AA を知ったのは1988年です。
The first time I had heard about Alcoholics Anonymous was in 1988.
それで、その知り方がですね、私の住んでるとこは日本の中でも田舎です。
And how I learned about AA, let me first tell you where I live, is I live way out in the country, in western Japan.
日本も40年迎えましたので、
AA just celebrated 40 years in Japan.
大きい、ありがとうございます。
Thank you.
大きい都市には AA のグループがありました。
There were AA groups in a lot of our larger cities already.
私の住んでるところには AA はありませんでした。
But there was no AA in the town that I lived in.
もちろん私も AA 知りません。
And of course I had never heard of AA either.
で、私はその前、1985年ぐらいから、
Starting in about 1985,
お酒を飲むようになり、
I was very heavily drinking.
最初の一杯が疲れを癒すために飲みました。
何を癒すために？
疲れ、仕事の疲れ。
So I started drinking because I needed to recover from the stress from work.
ただそれだけだったんです。
And I thought that was the only reason why I drank.
でもその元々依存症の気質があったのか。
I may already have had some alcoholic tendencies at that point.
一杯飲んですぐにですね、朝から飲むようになりました。
And it wasn't too long before I was already starting to drink first thing in the morning as well.
で、何があったから飲んだっていうわけじゃなく、ただ体がアルコールを欲してた。
It wasn't because I would drink because anything external happened. I just drank because my body was craving it.
でその言い訳、自分を正当化するために昔のいろいろな事柄、夫がああ言った、姑がこう言った、母がこう言った、私をうまく育ててくれなかった、兄と差別してたっていうことを理由として後から挙げていました。
When I would start drinking, I would start thinking about, oh, my husband said this, oh, my daughter-in-law said this, oh, my mother said this, and start digging up all that stuff from the past while I was drinking, and that was my excuse for my drinking.
でも最終的には朝から夜寝るまで私はウイスキーを片手に飲み続けるんですね。
So I would drink throughout the day, carrying around with me whiskey from morning until night.
でも私が飲んでる姿は主人、夫は見てないので。
But my husband never saw me drinking.
私がもうお酒を受け付けない体になって。
But by the time that I could no longer ingest alcohol,
病院に運ばれた時初めて私がお酒を飲んでることに気づきました。
By the time I needed to be taken to the hospital, probably for alcoholic poisoning, that was the first time my husband actually knew that I've been drinking.
それからが、あの、私と夫との、あの、地獄でした。
And that became the, that started the hell between me and my husband.
病院にかかってても、アルコール依存症の病、あの、勉強はできませんでした。
Even being a patient in that hospital, I learned nothing about alcoholism.
一日飲まない日を作りなさいと言われて退院しました。
They just said, don't drink one day at a time, and they let me out.
それで私も1週間あ1ヶ月半入院してたんでもうお酒は飲まないだろうと安心してました
So I had left that hospital after having been in there for a month and a half with the、firm conviction that I would be fine
でも帰ってすぐに一杯飲んだらまた止まらなくなって前よりひどい飲み方をしました
But you know that it didn't take long before I, then I took that first drink and immediately I was compelled back into drinking every day very vigorously.
買ってきては隠し。
I would buy it and hide it.
隠したお酒を見つかって捨てられればまた買ってくる。
And then if my hidden bottles got found and were thrown out, I'd go out and buy another one.
そんなせあの毎日を繰り返してました。
And that was my daily life.
で 最終的にはですね、もう主人の方が疲れて。
Ultimately, my husband got tired of this.
あの、病院に入院してくださいと。
And he said, you need to go back into the hospital.
で、アルコール依存症が治るまで、その頃アルコール依存症とは言われませんでしたけど。
He said, you might be able to get over your drinking problem. I don't think we even used the term alcoholic in those days.
あの、ずっともう入院、ずっと病院に入ってと。くれと言われました。
So he said, anyway, go to the hospital and check yourself in.
その時初めて、あの、それまでにもお酒はどうにかしなきゃいけないって気持ちはたくさん持ってたんですけれども。
You know, I had that feeling inside that I knew that alcohol was a problem. I knew I needed to do something about it, though.
どこに助けを求めていいかわからなかったんですね。
But I had no idea who to turn to in order to be able to find help.
で、もうこのお酒を手放さない限り私は家族と離れなきゃいけないっていう不安が大きくなり
I was worried that if I didn't do something about my drinking I would have to separate myself from my family
で酔ってる頭で考えました
So with a drunken mind I tried to figure out my problem
それであの友達にソーシャルワーカーがいることを思い出したんですね。
I remember that I had a friend who was a social worker.
その、初めてその人に電話で、夫にも助けてくれっていうことを言ったことないのに。
I had never asked my husband for help, but I called her for the first time and said, I think I need help.
その友達にあのお酒で困ってるどうしたらいいかっていうのは初めて言いました
And I asked her, I said, how does one stop drinking? It was the first time I'd ever said that.
その時に紹介されたのがあの大きい病院の精神科でした
So she introduced me to a psychiatrist who belonged to a very large hospital.
それでそこの病院であのミーティングをやってるからそこに出てごらんなさいと
And I was told that there were meetings that were going on at that hospital as well and said, you should go check them out.
それは AA ミーティングじゃありません。
It was not an AA meeting.
あの、病院の中の先生がやってるミーティングです。
These were just meetings that were run by the hospital and directed by the staff.
でもそこで、私はあの女で、女のアル中は私しかいないと思ってたんですね。
See, I thought I was the only female alcoholic in the whole world. See, in Japan, that's pretty common.
それで、あの、そのミーティングに行ったら女性がいたんですね。
So I went to that meeting inside the hospital, and there was a woman there.
で、私だけじゃなかったっていう安心。
And there was a sense of relief knowing that I was not the only woman.
でそのミーティングにしばらく通いました。
So I started going to that meeting on a regular basis.
でそこの先生がある日、
That doctor one day came up to me.
自分の部屋にいらっしゃいと。
He said, please come to my office.
アルコールの方がたくさんあるから。
So I've got a whole wall full of books on alcoholism.
貸してあげますよ。
He says, I'll lend one to you if you like.
で、そこに、その部屋に行って、
So I went to his office.
本棚を見たときに、
And I looked down at his bookcase.
一番大きい本がビッグブックだったんですね。
The biggest book on that shelf was our big book.
それが私の永遠の出会いなんです。
And that's how I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous.
それ、
ね、他の本取ったらここにいないからね。
なぜそれを取ったかは分かりません。
I don't know why my hand drifted to that particular book.
それを持って家に帰って。
But I borrowed that book and I took it home with me.
ただもうお酒でも根気はなくなってますので、こんな厚い本読めません。
So because my brain was so twisted at this point, I knew that I couldn't read that whole book anyway.
私ではなくそのビッグブックを夫が先に読んだんです。
My husband was actually the one to read that book first before I did.
夫の方が好きになったんです。
And my husband fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous.
夫は一滴もお酒飲みません。
My husband doesn't even drink.
それでその本を読んだ後の感想が、この本はアルコール依存症者じゃなくって、僕たちお酒の飲まない人間の生き方をも示してくれてるっていうことを言ったんですね。
And my husband told me his impression of that book. And he said,This book contains a way of living that's not just for alcoholics, but anybody can benefit from it.
で、この通りに生きられたら、どんなに楽な生き方ができるだろうっていう。
And he knew that if I followed the suggestions that were in that book, I could live a good life.
その言葉で私がビッグブック読んだんです。
And that was the attraction that caused me to pick up and read that book for the first time.
でも私の周りにはミーティングありません。
But near where I live, there are no meetings.
すぐ裏に書いてある住所に電話かけました。
So I looked in the back of the book and I called the telephone number that was written in the back of the book.
汽車で5時間のところにミーティングがある。
They told me there was a meeting 5 hours by train away from where I live.
泊まりで月に2度ほど通いました。
So I would go there twice a month. It would be an overnight trip, but I would go twice a month to that meeting.
でもやめれませんでした。
But I couldn't stop.
仲間が羨ましくって。
I was so jealous of the fellowship.
あなたたちには近所に仲間がいる。
You all had friends and fellowship around you.
私は家に帰ったらまた一人ぼっちだっていう気持ちがすごく強くなって。
Home, I had this feeling that I was all alone yet again.
飲んではいけないのは分かってるんです。
I knew that I wasn't supposed to drink.
で、永遠の中で生きていきたいのも自分の気持ちの中には強くあったんですけれども。
And I really had a strong desire to be able to follow Alcoholics Anonymous.
どうしてもその孤独っていうのに耐えられなくての、帰りに必ず飲んでました。
But I couldn't stand that, and that self-pity would take over, and I would end up drinking on the train on the way home.
でもそんなことしてたら、また昔と同じような飲み方になるっていう不安と。
But I got worried that if I kept doing that, then I'd end up back where I was originally.
やめたいっていう気持ち。
And I had that strong desire to stop.
で、簡単だったんですね。ミーティング会場を作ればいいんですから。
So then all of a sudden I had this new thought. I said, what if...I was to create a meeting near where I lived.
で、島根に初めてミーティング会場、女性と二人で作りました。
So myself and another woman started the very first meeting in our prefecture of Shimane.
で、私がつながった頃には、まだ日本の、いろんなところにはないところがたくさんありましたけれども、
When I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, there were still a lot of places that there was no AA.
今全県わかるかな？全県に必ず一つはミーティング会場あります。
But I can report today that there are meetings in every single one of our 47 prefectures. Even if it might only be one, we're everywhere.
ただそれから私はやっぱり2人だけでミーティングやってますので仲間が欲しくって日本全国仲間を求めて歩きました。
And since it was just the two of us and we wanted to get more members in, we started traveling around and talking with other alcoholics around the country.
ただそれは自分がお酒をやめたいためにだけです。
But that was just so that I wouldn't have to drink.
ステップもわからない、サービスもわからない、伝統もわからない、概念もわからない。
I didn't know about our steps, our unity, our recovery, our traditions, our warranties. I didn't know any of that stuff.
ただひたすらミーティングをと仲間を求めてました。
But I knew that I needed to seek out meetings and seek out our fellowship.
そういう中で大議員になり。
And from that, I became a GSR.
ですから大議員が何かっていうのも分からずに大議員やってました。
I didn't even know what a GSR was, but I became one.
あの、大議員やればより多くの仲間と会える。
But I knew if I was a general service rep that I would meet a lot of other people in the fellowship in other places.
で、だんだんだんだん少しずつですけれども、こう分かりかけ。サービスについて分かってきて。
So gradually by gradually, I started learning more about our program, more about service.
でも自分のステップ踏んでませんから、自分自身がどんどんどんどん苦しくなっていきました。
But I wasn't taking the steps, so I kept getting worse and worse.
私がつながった頃は、ステップっていうことをほとんど皆さん言ってませんでした。
At that time, when I came in, there were a lot of people weren't even bothering to take the steps.
スポンサーシップも取ってる人少なかったです。
And people who had sponsors were very rare.
だからどんどんソーバーの日は長くなっていくのに。
So you might end up getting, you know, being able to accumulate some time dry.
ビッグブックに書いてあるような楽な生き方全然できませんでした。
But I could not experience that sense of ease and comfort that takes by taking the steps.
である時それこそ精神の自殺じゃなくて私は肉体的な自殺を図りました。
So I あと5分ね。 So you know I started considering suicide.
でも生きてます。
But I'm still alive.
そこで私は生きているからもっと永遠の中で楽な生き方がしたい。
But I knew that I needed to find there has to be an easier way to do this program.
そのためにはどうしたらいいか。
And what do I needed to do? What did I need to do?
スポンサーを持って。
I had to find a sponsor.
このステップをちゃんとやって。
And I had to take these steps properly.
で、私のいただいたものを無償で今苦しんでいる人に手渡す。
And I needed to start passing on those things that had been so freely given to me to the next person who suffers.
それに気づきました。気づかされました。
That's what I came to understand.
それからまた私は突っ走ります。突っ走ります。
Oh, and so then I started running a little bit more.
大議員やって、表議員やって。
So I became the GSR, then I became the area delegate.
常任理事をやって。
And became a trustee.
で、常任理事をやった後。
And after I rotated out as being a trustee.
やはり、こう、2週間後には何にも来なくなるんですね、連絡が。
One of my friends said, all of a sudden the phone call stopped only 2 weeks after I rotated.
それで、私はそれと同時に自分の足も止めてしまいました。
何を
言った？足、動く。
And so all of a sudden I stopped moving around the country as well.
それで、このアルコールっていうのは怖いもんです。
And alcohol is very cunning.
すぐ来ました。
It came to me immediately.
スリップしました。
And I slipped.
ただ、ほんの一口で。
On only one sip.
夫に、現行犯で逮捕されました。
And my husband all of a sudden came home and caught me.
それからまたすぐ AA につながって、新たな、ソーバー始めました。
And so then I went back to AA to get a new sobriety.
それが2002年の9月の16日です。
And that was in 2002, September 21st.
だから本当に AA はあのステップ踏んで無償で返していけば大きいものをくれます。
And now I know that if I take these steps and I continue to pass it on without any expectation of anything in return, it will return in ways that are unimaginable.
最後の大きい仕事として WSM 評議員を4年間やらせてもらいました。
And just jumping ahead, the last job that I had in AA was to serve Japan as the World Service Meeting Delegate.
世界の仲間とつながっている、本当にこのプログラムは素敵な大きな力を持っているものと思います。
And I really got to meet the fellowship from all around the world and got to see the joys and the treasures that we have amongst us.
今はあのグループのコーヒー係と、
And now my group even lets me make the coffee again.
あの刑務所に月に1回メッセージを運んでます。
And I carry the message to our prisons once a month.
本当にこのプログラムがあったおかげで、
And because I, this time I did the program,
今こうやって生かされてます。
And I get to stand before you today.
家族も平和です。
And my family is also at peace.
ありがとうございました。
And I thank you all very much.